But now we've come full circle. We're back to the beginning of the podcast, and we're going to start again. So if you could take your notes.
And the driver says, I really hope things work out. She says, do you remember what she says?
No.
I remember what Pascal says.
What does Pascal say?
He says, I'm not. And then he closes the door and then the jerk drives away.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's something like, I'm sure everything will work out all right.
And he's like, I'm not.
Yeah. But before that, he said, this is where he has to part the ways. And I think because they're confronting the big baddie. That he can't be there anymore because he's a good spirit. And mm-hmm. I think for some reason, there are certain parts where those two things don't mix in mm-hmm. in Stephen King lore. And I wish I knew more. There's lots of theories. But there are certain good entities that can't encounter the it force of negativity that is represented by the Wendigo slash evil spirit thing of this film. Okay, so she gets out of the truck. She turns towards her house, right? And then all of a sudden, she hears her sister's voice go, Rachel!
Yeah, and she looks back at Judd's house.
And then she hears the baby laugh.
Yeah.
She is baited.
Yes. And so she goes into the house, and she is like, Judd? Judd?
And we're just walking into people's house.
She goes upstairs, and she's looking around, and she hears Zelda in one of the rooms.
Yeah, she opens up the door. Zelda's squatting in the corner by the window.
Mm-hmm.
And then she lays into her sister. Yeah.
And Rachel just sort of like is, ah. Personally, if I saw that, I'd be running the fuck out of the house.
100%.
Yeah.
But it's super sad because what we don't see emphasized much before now, I think it's touched on once, but Zelda's like, me and Gage, we're going to get you, me and Gage.
Mm-hmm.
What she doesn't know, what Rachel doesn't know, and what we only begin to grasp is that this spirit, I would mm-hmm. rather call it, and it that has possessed the body of Gage is also using Zelda and mixing and marrying these two. And this is the culmination of that
mm-hmm.
because she's like, me and Gage, we're going to get you. We're going to get you, Rachel.
Right.
Man, you'll never get out of bed again. Mm-hmm. Her worst fear, having watched her sister die this terrible death.
Mm-hmm.
And so then she's screaming. She's like, no, no, in the way that she does several times in this film. And,
right.
Oh, maybe this is the no moment.
No. Sorry. This wasn't the... There are two dramatic no's in this movie. This is not the second one.
Oh, is it yet to come?
It is yet to come.
Beautiful. So she closes her eyes, covers her face, and then the screaming from Rachel turns into baby laughter, and she opens her eyes, and she's like, Gage.
Yeah. And he's wearing a top hat and he has a cane and he's in the little outfit.
A little green dress with a frilly collar. Not
mm-hmm.
not unlike a certain portrait that we've seen already.
Yes.
Not unlike a certain sister we just had a flash of.
Like between the portrait, Zelda and Gage, they're all wearing this like velvet dress. It's like one of those like night dresses
mm-hmm.
and it's nice and peppered throughout the movie, and it is a movie only edition. It is not something that is in the book
because we needed a visual thing,
right?
Because in the book they'd be able to describe mm-hmm. the connection between them or the internal moanings of the person who's being abused, right? Well, we also see visually in this film that Gage's hair has become red, whereas mm-hmm. it was very blonde before.
Right.
Which is another visual.
Mm-hmm. Because the portrait had a redhead, right?
Yes, because Zelda's a redhead.
Oh, yeah.
We only know the cat is evil because its eyes glow all the time. We only know Gage is totally evil because he's a redhead, and I would say that to my mother's face.
We'd like to... Okay, I'm not
going. So you can just leave it there because you guys can have a good relationship. She's required to love me.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm just like, Gage is so dapper.
And he's...
I brought you...
Oh, sorry. No, go ahead.
I brought you something, Mommy. I brought you something, mommy.
Gage. And she, and
he's just holding up this.
Okay. Gage, how about we take that?
Set down the knife.
Yeah.
We're going to set down the scalpel. That's daddy's scalpel. We're going to set it down in a safe place. Yeah.
We're going to just take this.
Mom's going to keep it safe for you.
Yeah.
We'll put it up on this really high shelf.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a dull knife, they said on the Wikipedia.
I was very grateful to hear that.
Yeah. No, they didn't hand a baby a real scalpel.
I would be surprised if they did. Like, I mean, it was either going to be a dull knife or it was going to be like a plastic one.
Yeah.
That, you know, but yeah.
But he walks up to her and it's something a kid would say. I got this for you, mommy.
Yeah.
So he's saying it and it's so cute because it's so sincere. Mm-hmm. Just like if he was handing her a dandelion, it just happens to be a scalpel that he stabbed a guy with.
Yeah.
And then, so cute. And she's like, oh. Gage. And she's like reaching for him and he's like toddling towards her
off camera, and then off camera we hear the
so then it flashes to Gage getting hit by the truck again. He's mm-hmm. he's scrambling after the kite string and he's going in front of the truck, and then bam, Lewis wakes up.
Yeah.
And what does he do?
He pratfalls and hits his head on the corner of the
number of the, six
the table. Yeah,
head on the table, knocks a pillow off, and then it flashes away, and then it flashes back to him, and then the pillow's back on the bed, which is a continuity error thing. Mm. But
and when he's off the bed, he looks up and he sees the muddy footprints, but he also sees
his pilfered medical bag,
and he like opens up, and you made the greatest comment, my lucky scalpel.
Right. Who's carrying their scalpel around? It's not like he's an EMT, and it's certainly not 1846.
That bag looks like it's from 1846.
It did. My notes go, oh no, he is an evil baby.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. He goes downstairs. He's again sees the muddy footprints.
He looks at the counter and sees all the baby memorabilia, which I have dubbed the baby stuff gut punch.
Mm-hmm. And the phone rings. It's Irwin. You know, it's father-in-law.
We're at 1 hour and 26 minutes we're into almost, this film.
We're almost done, we promise.
It really is. It is steamrolling down the hill, guys.
Yeah. And Irwin informs Lewis that Rachel is no longer in Chicago. She's gone back home. And Lewis says, yes, she's here.
Well, my notes say, Irwin. Ellie's dreams.
I know. Ellie has these bad dreams and Irwin's like, well, you need to go ahead and put Rachel on the phone because Ellie's having really bad dreams.
She's
about
in
it.
Near hysterics. And
yeah.
I'm totally in a place to be asking favors of you.
Mm-hmm. And Lewis says, I can't really talk right now, and he hangs up the phone.
And he starts to follow the footprints down into the Panther cellar garage area.
Right. And then the phone rings again. And he's like, Irwin, I can't talk right now.
And then the baby says, I'm at Judd's house. First I play with Judd. Then I played with mommy. Now I want to play with you.
It's so adorable.
If a kid said that to you and he wasn't a dead guy, you'd be all over that.
Oh, I know. I'd be like, yes, I will play with you.
Mm-hmm.
I will go ahead and I will play hide and go seek. And I will hide in the shower and you will never find me. I will. Mm-hmm. I would actually hide underneath a blanket very obviously, mm-hmm. and then wait for them to like figure it out. That's the cutest.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to hide very obviously under this blanket. And then they're like, I'm going to find you.
Okay.
Sorry.
So he for being maybe the craziest person, he does prepare for the next part.
Yeah. He gets needles, mm-hmm. and heads to Judd's place.
And he decides, I'm gonna stab a cat right in the butt.
Do you know what he says while Church is eating the he says a couple of things that I thought was pretty interesting.
He lures the demon cat out.
Yeah.
With a pork chop.
Yeah.
Or a steak, either way.
It was raw meat.
Yeah.
Chicken breast.
Certainly not.
Okay. Sorry.
It was a piece of meat.
I know.
It looked like a cutlet.
I know. But
not like a chicken cutlet.
No, I was just giving you a bad time. Oh, sorry. No,
this is actually venison.
Oh, okay.
It was actually a piece of a Wendigo.
He says.
It was actually, and you were right to call out a fowl because it was a loony.
An original
loon. It was a loon.
An original smoking loon.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay.
What does he say to the cat?
Today is Thanksgiving Day for cats, but only if they came back from the dead. And then he stabs the cat.
In the butt. Okay. I don't know if you've had to inject a cat, but I have. And I am also not a veterinarian. But you just poke them between the shoulder blades. You just get the scruff up like a mommy cat and you get it in there. And it doesn't hurt or anything. You don't actually have to go for the butt.
Right.
My notes get real frantic at this point because I hadn't looked it up yet.
Yeah. And then when Church goes down, he's like, play dead. Stay dead. And he just has this really dramatic moment. And I'm like, whoa.
The cat's been tormenting him this entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so my notes. Okay, when you see this scene, when Church dies the first time, you see this stuffed cat, and you're like, oh, all right, it could be a stuffed animal or a taxidermied cat or something. It's a puppet. It's a stuffed cat that isn't a real cat, right? Well, this scene, I wrote down that is either a real dead, sedated, or magically perfect cat doll, and I'm like terrified of that moment. It was actually, they had a member of the ASPCA there, a veterinarian who sedated the cat. And so the cat who looks super real with its eyes all bugging out, having a derp face laying on the gravel, that cat was fine. The cat woke up. The cat had just had an anesthesia, perfectly acceptable within the rules of this film of life and how you should treat animals.
Right.
I'm just saying, the director said that the hardest thing of the entire film was to get that cat to eat the stupid pork chop. There's a lot going on in this film, and she said that the hardest thing was getting that cat to eat a pork chop. So, I give total props, because that cat really chewed into it at one part.
Yeah. And so, Lewis goes into Judd's house. Mm-hmm. And we see the walls are dilapidated.
Yeah. Okay, wait. So he puts on gloves to sedate the cat.
Yeah.
Or not sedate, or to kill the cat, right?
Yeah.
He walks into the house, sees that it's gross inside, which is something King likes to do. He likes to make a room fine and gross and distorted and normal, and he'll flip back and forth, right? He walks in. It's disgusting. There's mold and green slimy stuff on the floor. You know what he does first thing?
Takes off his gloves.
Why does he do it?
Don't know.
Why wouldn't you keep them on?
I don't know. We're almost done. Okay. We are almost done.
Look, listen to me flip to my last page of notes. Oh, that's good.
So Lewis goes upstairs, and as he's going up the stairs, he sees this shoe, and he picks it up, and he's like, Rachel.
I didn't make any note of that because I didn't really, it's a thing, but my next note is, this kid is really great at hiding bodies.
It must be the spirit that's in the kid.
So he's wandering. He's trying to find. When he hears the baby. Okay, he picks up the shoe. Hears the baby laugh. He looks up the stairs. Snap! Everything is normal again. Which is totally Kingsian,
right?
To do.
Yeah. And so he goes upstairs. He hears the laughter in a room. And when he goes into that room, he's looking around and he sees this little bump coming out of. Underneath the bed, and he lifts it up, and we get Judd's face with slits, and part of his lower lip is missing.
They used an actual statue and not or a dummy of Crandall instead of the actual actor, so that's why you only get a brief glimpse of it. But the second watching, I stared at it really hard, and it's actually a really good replica.
Yeah.
It's believable to the degree that anything in this movie is believable.
Right. And Lewis runs out of the room, and
before he'd gone into that room, just to belabor so many points.
Yeah.
He walks past the attic stairs, which had been obliterated. But visually, the attic stairs mimicked the same way that Rachel's sister's bedroom was in her house as a kid. So it was interesting visually to see her go through to find the fake sister Gage creature in the same way that her childhood self walked past the set of stairs to go visit her dying sister when she was little. But when Lewis goes through, the stairs are destroyed and he looks up at the crawl space, but it's closed. So that's why he goes in and finds Judd. And then he's like, well, I'm done searching in here. Better leave.
Yeah. And so he leaves the room. And after he gets past the crawl space or to the attic, a body falls down.
My notes go, another body harness.
Yeah, it was very obvious.
Because it was his wife being hung.
Right. And then he looks up and you see, like, demon baby Gage doll.
He's just standing up there laughing his ass off. Mm-hmm. He is so cute. Somebody made him laugh. And he's, like, wearing his little suit. And now he's in a little suit. Mm-hmm. And he's, like, holding his, like, little scalpel.
Yeah.
And he's just like, ah. And then one of my favorite things of the whole film happens. Somebody chucks a baby doll that is formed Cage. Like, just, you see, because if it was me or you, right, and we were jumping down from a tall place and we're going to battle, right, you'd go feet first so that you were ready to stab, right?
Yeah.
He is thrown head first so that you can't see the doll's face right at him and he's tackled to the ground. It's delicious.
My note is Gage attacks Lewis, who then gets thrown away doll style.
I've also dubbed this Bitey Stabby.
Yeah.
Still the cutest thing.
Yeah. And so
So battle ensues.
Yeah.
The baby is thrown and Lewis manages to get... His second syringe had been thrown down the stairs.
Right.
But he's the smartest guy in horror movie history, has a third syringe in his pocket.
In the book, it specifies that he has like four syringes total. So he was like, yeah, two per thing.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I mean, enough.
Yeah. I mean, what would make me think that a syringe of some like very random poison, or maybe a specific kind of poison, I can't remember if it's specified in the book, it probably is, but like, why would that, just some concoction in a syringe, actually put down this thing?
I think that the spirit is linked to the body it's hosted by.
Okay.
In so, some way.
No body, nothing for the spirit to do.
Right. They can manipulate perception and they can manipulate that body, but they can't if one is compromised. I mean, it has a physical form. Mm-hmm. So that was that when it was affected, you know, changed its ability to harm the others. So in King's universe, that flows back and forth, and although presents in different ways, is always the same kind of evil.
Yeah.
I think that's why hurting Gage's
body.
Let's admit that it's dead because he's not actually hurting his own baby.
That's true.
But why it would affect it. So, but this is where we get to, we're only like six cuts away.
Yeah. So he throws Gage away and then he like gets that third needle ready and Gage is coming closer and
does that cute walk waddle thing that he's like, I'm going to get you, daddy.
And then
he doesn't say that.
Yeah. But then Lewis like sticks the needle into Gage's neck and it looks real, but you told me it was retractable.
Yeah. There's a trick for the fake needle to pop into the plunger of the fake syringe. It's kind of like, have you ever seen one of those practice EpiPens?
Yeah.
Where there's actually no needle, but it pops, when you tap it, it pops in.
Uh-huh.
It's like that.
Right.
It's the same kind of mechanics.
Right.
But so I can, with my mental brainness, tell you what the stage direction for this baby is. Okay, so we're going to poke you with this thing. See, it doesn't hurt. See, you do it to me. I do it to you. It's fun. It's really fun. I do it to you. You do it to me. See, there's no needle. It's not a doctor. We're just pretending. We're just pretending right now. Okay, I'm going to put it on your neck. You want to put it on my neck? Oh, but I'm going to pretend it hurts. Owie. Does it hurt? No, it doesn't hurt. I'm going to do it to you. Does it hurt? No. Okay, can you scream for me? Ah! And the baby's like, ah, I'm going to pretend to stab you with this thing. And then the guy stabs him in the neck and they cut the sound. There is no real sound. And you just see this baby who's super happy, like turned partially away from the camera, just being like, ah! When you see it like that, like that's exactly what it is. But then they cut to the dad being traumatized.
Mm-hmm.
They cut back to the baby who's done being injected. And now this baby's actually sad. Mm-hmm. He's got wet eyes and he's just like,
no fair.
No fair.
Yeah. And he
excuse me. Best villain line ever.
Okay, and that thud, this kid takes a real, like, fall.
Yeah, they're like, can you just wander around here and then, like, put debris in his way? And he just falls down with his head on a door.
It looks like a legitimate fall that hurt him.
No, I don't think it looked like it hurt him, but he, in the way that like, oh, yeah, he yeah, went yeah. down for real, but yeah. I don't think it was enough to hurt him. So he trips. His back is against the door. Mind you, he's a little moved over to the side when yeah. we cut back to this part, but he's slumped against the door and he's looking at him. And then somebody gave him the stage direction. Now close your eyes and slide down a little bit. And he like closes his eyes and he just slumps down a little bit. And that's the rest we see of that real actor. And it's only a doll after this.
Mm-hmm. And so Lewis goes ahead and burns down Judd's house. He's throwing gasoline all over the place.
Yeah. He leads a trail specifically all the way to his son's body.
Yeah.
My notes are just burn it down.
And he carries Rachel's body in a white cloth to the burial grounds.
He starts walking back towards his house because this all happened in Judd's house. Mm-hmm. And the house explodes behind him. And my notes, of course, say, cool guys, don't look at explosions.
And so he walks away from the house and Victor is like, I'm sorry, Lewis.
Pascal shows back up.
I'm so sorry, but you cannot let that thing out into the world.
Don't make it worse.
I was like, no, it's okay. I waited too long with Gage, but this just happened. I could go ahead and make this work.
Oh, wait, is this the part?
This is the last, this is the second dramatic no.
Do it.
Just like, no. Oh, he's like, Lewis, don't do it. No.
And then the disappointment made him discorporate.
Again?
he just paid.
He incorporated back into his body.
That is exactly right. He woke up somewhere, his brain hanging out.
He's just like, I'm going to get this Lewis Creed.
So in Red Dwarf, during the first season of the first episode, in order to not have to have the effect of somebody walking through a hologram all the time, they exposit that even though whatever character his name was is a hologram, please, even when angry or in a rush or in a hurry, you don't walk through him. Make great expense to not walk through him. And so in the entire series, he's only walked through like 3 times mm-hmm. over like the last 11 seasons.
Yeah.
And so when Pascal gets walked through by Lewis carrying Rachel's body, I'm like, rude.
So, night comes and Lewis.
Oh, by the way. Oh. Okay. We've walked to this cemetery how many times to bury something?
Specifically to bury something? Mm-hmm. This is the third time.
Okay. The other 2 times, someone was carrying a shovel.
He's not carrying a shovel.
This pisses me off. Well, bad. Unless he left the shovel up there from when he buried Gage.
I don't think so.
He walked through the garage, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, because it was the one time he was going into the garage and Church wasn't like all being like, mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure he dropped things off there. So
he goes into the kitchen with an alarm clock.
And he's got solitaire.
Yeah, there was some creepy looking tarot cards. They were playing cards, but they looked like tarot cards.
I don't know.
And he didn't play any kind of recognizable game. That didn't look like solitaire to me.
It looked like it was solitaire to me, but that's just, maybe it's because I play a lot of solitaire.
Maybe you know better solitaire than I do.
I thought it was interesting. I noted that, like, he had buried his wife, and then the first card he put down was a jack. That's what I thought it was. I could be wrong.
I don't remember.
Yeah. But he's playing with cards, and then he sees the door open up.
Well, doesn't the alarm go off because it's midnight?
Oh, yeah, it's midnight.
Now, none of the other resurrections, if you want to call them that, none of the other reanimations or reintroductions of these bodies has had a specific time.
Mm-hmm.
So why midnight?
I don't know.
Maybe he just didn't want to be asleep.
Maybe.
When she showed up.
Maybe he was testing it out because he's a doctor.
Probably. It's good after on your third experiment to start applying science to stuff.
Especially when you're reanimating bodies.
Just playing with the dead and the unknown.
Yeah.
I call this scene, honey, I'm home.
And she has like one interesting thing about both her and Pascal.
Mm-hmm.
Pascal's left eye is clouded over. When Rachel comes back from the dead,
mm-hmm.
She does not have a clouded out eye, but it's missing and it's got like pus coming out of it.
Yeah, the pus eyeball. She's like, she says something. I forget what she says.
I don't care what she says. When Tasha Yar gets finally returned from the mud monster, she does not look pretty.
That is correct.
And there you go.
Thank you. She says something and tilts her head back, like, kiss me or something like that.
I thought she said darling.
That's probably exactly right. It was some endearment sort of thing. But here's the thing. We're at hour 57 and part 129. 100
billion.
125,600 parts of... So she's like, darling, let's just say darling. She tilts her head back and I don't know how they did it, but she like flutters her actual eye under the prosthetic hole slash not hole of her face gouge. And just the brownest, uckiest, pussy stuff runs down. It's watery, but it runs down. It's discolored and runs down her face. He goes and he kisses her.
Because that's the first thing I'm going to do.
Totally going to do. But did you notice that his mouth touched the stuff that had rolled down her face so it was incorporated into the kiss?
No, I didn't.
It was well gross.
Have we already flashed back to Red Dwarf Sirens episode?
No, because okay. The only Red Dwarf reference I made was you don't walk through holograms because it's rude.
Oh.
You can make the Sirens reference, though. It's fun.
Oh, what season was that? It was season six? I want to say six, episode one. It's definitely episode one of either five or six. I think it's six.
I don't have that in my lexicon.
Can I just say six again?
Yeah. Six, you say?
Yeah. Okay. I think.
Anyways, Rimmer finds himself on the Sirens planet.
Yes.
And no, it's Lister.
Lister goes out to see the Sirens.
Mm-hmm. No, he goes out to fix the ship.
He goes to, okay.
Nitpicking. That's what we do here.
Uh-huh. So Lister goes out. He's trying to fix the ship because they got stranded on an asteroid.
You're Peter Francis's sister.
And she's like, "Hi, Dave." And she's and one thing leads to another. She's like, "All right, I know what you want to do. You want to squeeze my buttocks together to make one juicy giant peach."
Really good scene.
And she says, I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to kill me in my by drowning me in my own drool. And she's eventually dated.
She goes, I know this scene really well because it's a very sexy scene. Okay, except for the next part. She goes, I will take you to the peak of ecstasy. Oh, wait, and then something like that. I totally know this. And then I will
blow your mind.
Is it blow your mind?
Yes. Oh. Yeah. Because
sirens eat brains.
Yes. A lot of things that pretty much crash into the meteorites.
Well, here's the thing. So Peter Francis' sister, so he's on an alien world. This beautiful woman he knows shows up and is like, let's make out. And then says that, I'll take you to the heights of ecstasy and then blow your mind. And then they start making out. And it's very tall, beautiful, older than him as a little kid woman. And then adult him, making out with this gorgeous, like, super done up model type, right? And they do this turning shot where, like, Lister's back goes in front of you so you can't see her anymore. And then it cuts back. And do you want to describe it?
It's a giant brain-eating beetle.
It's a slimy beetle. It's got, in the way that a beetle has, like, a long beak-like protrusion. And it's like, it's got the squidgy mouth at the end, and it's like, and he's just going to town, making out with the grossest gooey beetle thing you've ever seen in your entire life. And that's what Jonathan thought of when he saw Rachel kiss Lewis in the kitchen after her eyeball gooch.
Split second later, thought of Jack Torrance making out with an old lady.
They call her the witch in The Shining. The witch,
yeah. He probably already did that shout out while I was out of the room.
We mentioned The Shining. Just because King calls back to it again and again, Rachel calls Lewis Doc, and they all have The Shining and also making out with something gross when you don't know just how gross it is.
Yeah.
So she reaches out,
grabs a knife.
We fade to black.
Ah!
And I'm like, maybe Gage got it from her side of the family.
Maybe.
Stabby.
And while the movie was definitely terrifying, for me, the book ends like this.
Yes!
These are like literally the last words in the book.
Okay, but has it ended with her stabbing him?
Do you want me to read?
I'm sorry. No, yeah, I do. Okay. I just didn't know if it described the end sequence of the thing.
Silence. A cold hand fell on Lewis's shoulder. Rachel's voice was grating, full of dirt. "Darling," it said. That's it.
So
in the book,
stabby part.
In the book, I don't know if he then takes his zombie wife, full of like smelling like the ground she was buried in.
They could have been happily ever after, it sounds like.
And then goes back and gets his daughter.
No.
And then that poor little girl is being raised by crazy dad and zombie mom.
I mean, what's wrong with a mixed family?
I mean, if they treat her right.
But mom smells like sour earth.
Mm-hmm.
And dad can't stop staring off into the distance.
Right. And like when Victor Pascal in the book says, "This is where I have to leave you," he literally does leave her. And like, you don't see Victor.
There's no at the end?
No, there's not.
When I was reading through the IMDb, I keep saying IMDb, but I only glanced at the Wikipedia because it wasn't as fun as the IMDb. Okay. So, they're like in the trivia section, they're like, the ending was vague for the producers. So they went back and reshot a more conclusive ending. And I was like, what the hell does that mean? Because I was watching it. I was like, this doesn't seem overly dramatic. It seems like it's closure, but mm-hmm. I don't think that it's like a more punchy ending that they were seeking.
Yeah.
But you know all the punch you really did need at the end of this?
A knife stab?
No, well, no. That's the stabby part. But if you want to put a finer point on it, you might end with a theme song.
Oh, you mean like I don't want to get buried
in a pet cemetery.
I don't want to live my life again. This is the Ramones. This is the second Ramones song.
It is the poppiest, most happity-dewiest. Like, you want to put on your leg warmers. You want to put that ponytail right on the top of your head. You want to tease out them bangs. You might give them a little crimp.
I don't hate the song, but that could just be because it's the Ramones.
This
is the worst thing that they do.
Out of context, I love this song. In context, what the hell are the Ramones?
Earth Girls Are Easy had a theme song.
I would like to point out, we have Never Ending Story, followed by Earth Girls Easy. Okay. I don't even remember the theme song.
Earth Girls Are Easy was written years before Earth Girls Are Easy, the movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
Never Ending Story was a children's film. And the director of this film directed Ramones videos, got asked to do this movie, and then was like, you know, Ramones, the book mentions the Ramones.
Yeah. Hey, ho, let's go.
How'd you like to write the theme song? And they were like, okay.
In the same way that Downtown Julie Brown was like, they asked her, do you want to write the theme song to Earth Girls Are Easy?
She wrote it before the movie came out.
No. Okay.
Yeah, yes. They were like, hey, you wrote this really great song. We wrote an even worse movie about it.
It's tie-in.
Well, I'll just say that I, choosing between all of them, I like to push the Promolot.
Push the Promolot.
I love that. But it is also not a theme song. So your argument is moot. Now we see the violence inherent in the system. Be depressed. Children, you have... I keep saying children. But look, applauders, you gorgeous beings. You have traversed the darkness with us.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't climb that bale of twigs, the pile of twigs, that mountain of twigs. We did it for you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you came with us emotionally, like Pascal did. But now we've come full circle. We're back to the beginning of the podcast, and we're going to start again. So if you could take your notes. Okay.
I'm laughing opening because scene. I'm so tired.
Paramount, and then there's black titles, and then we open up on a fish tank that's full of like rainwater. Okay. Lydia, I've loved this movie with you. I would recommend it to anybody who can stand a little bit of gore.
I would recommend this movie to anybody who has just watched Monty Python and the Quest for the Holy Grail.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that works.
Like
that
us, works. Each
yeah.
other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. I okay. like it. I okay. like it a lot. This okay. is where Jonathan edits all the stuff we couldn't fit into our actual dialogue. We had an awful good time is probably my favorite thing that he says.
I don't know.
And I can't believe I left it out when we talked about it.
Now I want to play with you.
Okay.
All right.
So.
Shocked.
Shocked. You go. Go if you want to, you can go. If you want me to go, I'll go. Mine's not terribly solid, but it is an actual thing.
There were moments where this movie did not know how to do the transition. And if there are executive producers who came in and messed with what the director was doing,
mm-hmm.
those executive producers' hands should have been slapped. Because Mary Lambert,
she genuinely says she enjoyed the project.
Okay, good.
And even after, I think she still appreciates the work after, from my impression from what I read, was that she appreciated it after it was all said and done. She doesn't regret it at all.
All right. I just feel like there's like some very quick transitions that needed to have a little bit more breathing room because as the audience, the energy is like up, 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 up. Up, 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 up. And it's like, give us moments to breathe. Just,
yes.
Yeah.
The horror gets really good for me when there are breathings in and out.
Yes.
And King, you should trust him to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And trust a director that he trusts to, and it sounded like, from what I read, that he was working with her. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the tree with the stupid swing that he put up right after it fell off the tree for some reason?
Yeah.
There was no tree in front of the house that they used.
Right.
They found a fancy tree somewhere and moved it in front of the house. They made the film that they wanted to make.
Yeah.
They needed to trust the creator more.
Right. That was probably the biggest things that I would have changed. And that's what the shocked moment is, ladies and gentlemen. It's what we, as podcasters who do this podcast, talking about our opinions would have changed. So.
Yeah, what I would have changed is the cat that scared the crap out of me. I was so sad and bewildered, and I paused it, and I looked at Jonathan, and I made loud noises, and I jumped and stomped around for a bit, and I was so mad that they'd hurt this cat that is what I would have changed. You gave me the freakiest non-actual spinal meningitis looking thing. This baby who looked like somebody was like, and now you're a zombie. And he's like, now I'm a zombie, daddy. Stay with me. Like, they gave you so many weird things to work with. But what they really wanted to bring in, what they really wanted to freak me out with was this dead cat.
Right.
And they succeeded.
Right.
And they did not need to succeed at that.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Yeah.
What is your applaud moment?
Well, I'd have to say the first third of this movie. It was just really solid movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I mean, we've only been doing this like for what, 8 episodes? But I feel like just looking at movies and being just a little bit more critical lets me see, oh, okay, well, I can see why people say that that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see why people say that that doesn't work. And so seeing this 4 times, I can understand why people, you know, gave it a 60% on Rotten Tomatoes or a 6.1 on IMDb.
6.6, let's be fair.
6.66?
Probably. You know some nerd made... Oh, that was... Sorry. No, that's okay. You know some nerd made that happen. Jonathan, did you fix the score on IMDb? So it was 666?
No, but the guy from this has been in a couple of more things, and one of them is a title with a 666 in it.
I liked the first third of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
I liked all of it, but yeah. I can see why, like, if they'd paced it a little more.
Yeah.
Gave themselves more time at the end
mm-hmm.
to flesh out the scares.
Yeah.
It would have been well freakier. They could have made the lighting darker, too. That was a little too bright. Or maybe Hulu turned it up just to piss me off.
There's a lot of day shots. A lot of day shots.
Yeah. For a horror film, it took a part of the day a lot. And we only go to the pet cemetery like 3 times.
Guy's name again is Dale Midkiff. and in 2001.
I'm so sure that it's Madcap or something.
Midkiff, M-I-D-K-I-F-F. Midkiff. Dale Midkiff.
I'm with you. Apologize.
Dale Midkiff was in Route 666 in 2001. He's also been in a ton. Let me just find horror movies that he's done. Actually, a lot of them.
Yeah, you don't have to list them.
Flight of the Living Dead.
Okay, I would watch that. Why haven't I watched that?
We mentioned that he was on Dexter, and he was also in Hell's Kitty, Hell on Heels, Hell's Kitty the Remake, The Crow Salvation, and also The Pet Sematary. Yes.
So do you want to know what my applaud moment was?
Yes, please.
There were so many things that I enjoyed about this film.
Is it Victor?
Oh, Pasco. I mean, I've got like my top three.
Right.
Can I have top three?
Go for it.
Okay. My applauds are like this. We'll start at the bottom. Anything that baby said was so cute and hit my ears in this ASMR style of that I just loved it. We had an awful good time. Yes. I want that to be my ringtone, right? Two. So that's three. Two, Pascal.
Yeah.
I want brain showing ghost guy, good angel on my shoulder, Pascal, next to me all the time.
Right.
Could you imagine him getting you through customs?
Possibly.
Saving you the last piece of chocolate cake in the lunch line?
Definitely.
He would tell you your shoe was untied when you were on a date so you didn't pratfall like your freaking Dr. Lewis Creed through this entire film. Know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But my number one favorite thing in this entire film was having sat through that entire Ramones song placed at the very wrongest part of the film. At the very end of the credits, it says, "No animals were harmed in any way during the recording of this film," which makes me feel so much better for that cat. And let's be clear, applauders, there were four of those cats. One was Sarah. One was Gonzo. I didn't write down any of their names. They're just the ones I remember because I was like, oh, Gonzo, and my brain deleted the other two. But all four of those cats are fine. I mean, they were fine in 89, but now they're all dead. But I think you've gone the journey with us. We've given you a little extra long episodes, a little caveat here or there, a little treat for you to listen to about Muppets.
Yeah.
We're going to give Jonathan creative license to edit this stuff because he's done such a good job. We got a shout out to our Patreons. Yo, Christine. Yo, Jeannie. You the best. To our sharers and supporters. I mean, yeah. Like, every person who has hit like or share has, like, gotten, like, 10 Pascal points every time, which only compound the interest of your Pedro points.
Hypothetical. If you buried an Artax in a pet cemetery.
Oh my.
So. Would you get a luck dragon?
Okay, but here's the thing. Jonathan, Lucas proposed that Artax was already a zombie horse. So if you bury a zombie horse in the pet cemetery, is that like a death double negative and you get like an even more alive horse?
I finally discovered why you guys wanted to do a podcast, and it was just so you could have a show where you could create your own canon for anything that you wanted.
Headcanon.
It's true. Applauders, enjoy your April.
Get plenty of rest.
Pace yourself. This is a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah. I guess the only other thing is just have a great spring.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It finally stopped snowing. All right.
Watch it snows the day this goes up.
Perfect. That would be perfect.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Have a great one.
Bye.
From the dankest partitions of this peculiar pebble known as Earth, we hope that you've enjoyed our unearthing of 1989's Pet Sematary Applauder. This extended four-part episode was our way of saying thanks to our newest Patreon applauders for supporting us in this new season. Hey, this is your audio engineer and author of exquisitely horrific exit scripts, Jonathan.
applauding your endurance through April showers and rainy commutes as we grab our microphones and get ready for more zany new sing-alongs. Would you like to back us up? We're on Facebook at Shocked and Applaud, or Instagram and Twitter at Shocked Applaud. Or if you can throw in a fiver every month, we'll send you full access to our Unbleeped channel for episodes the Friday before everyone else gets our public cut. Granted, I've been missing that deadline lately, but let's just chalk that up to Church the Cat clawing at my keyboard. Ready for May's episode 9? We can't wait to go downtown on that one, but until then, we'll be giving you a short micro-episode to satisfy your thirst for more. Plant yourself down. There's just a bit more left in episode 8. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay! Oh my goodness.
I have only had to pee for like an hour.